So, yesterday we began with the topic of empowerment, and today we want to take that a little further. But before I do so, I wanted to backtrack a little bit and a few details that I forgot to mention. The first day, we were discussing how Lord Chaitanya was...
Very nice, thank you.
We discussed how Lord Chaitanya was beginning to reveal his transcendental identity. And then eventually it came up to the point where Lord Chaitanya actually took sannyas in the second day. And we discussed then how he wandered around in the land of Radhadesh, the land where the Ganges doesn't flow. And how Lord Chaitanya was totally overwhelmed in love of God, and how Lord Nityananda tricked him, and then by trick, took him back to Navadvip to meet all the family members, and finally Mother Sachi, and how Mother Sachi was cooking there. So, there's the famous song, Ekadina Shantipure Advaitacharya Gare Dui Prabhu Bhojana Bashilo. It is explained that When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu returned there to the house of Advaitacharya, that Mother Sachi came there and cooked for 7 days. And during those 7 days, she cooked so many preparations, and of course that Lord Chaitanya's favorite preparation was sak, spinach. So Tatvavit Prabhu was already asking about this spinach yesterday. I was spontaneously attracted to it. So I thought, and then I remembered, oops, I forgot that. So I thought, and it was nice, so I thought I should do it this morning. Mother Sachi knows that Lord Chaitanya is greatly satisfied with sak. For those who don't know, sak is spinach. Therefore, she cooked 20 different kinds of sak. The vegetable known as sak is more fortunate than any other preparation, for the Lord eats it again and again. See, this is good, huh? We never thought of different vegetables as being fortunate, but here the sabjis are very fortunate for being eaten by the Lord, and sak is most fortunate. It's eaten again and again. Slightly smiling, the Lord takes his meal, speaking about the glories of sak to everyone. The Lord says, this sak is called achyuta. By eating this sak, attraction for Krishna develops. At the time of eating, he would call different kinds of sak different names of Krishna. By eating patala bastuka and kalashak, one gains the association of the Vaishnavas life after life. If one eats salincha or helancha sak, he remains free from disease and gets devotion to Krishna. From the Chaitanya Bhagavat and Antya Lila. So it's very nice. And one shouldn't underestimate the power of sak, especially taken in Mayapur, where all these kinds of sak are available. So therefore, when in Mayapur, and you do get an opportunity to get some Mahaprasadam, then quote with you while you're there and see which one, what you get, you know, from eating it. Huh? It's very nice. Jaipataka Maharaj always calls out loud, you know, this is achyuta, this is achyuta. Right? Like that. Then, you know, like that. Another thing that we mentioned then in the last few days was we discussed a little bit the intolerance, the quotes of intolerance in the Chaitanya Charitamrita towards other faith or other concepts of spiritual life. And one detail I forgot to mention there is that on one occasion, Prabhupada spoke out on this and said, they should just stop being envious, right? They should just stop being envious. And it's nice in the sense that here Prabhupada is speaking of what I would call a defensive type of envy. You can have like offensive type of envy where you go out and after someone. But here it's a defensive type where the person sits in his own convictions and being very self-righteous about it, that it is all very nice and very good, and who dare say anything about my conviction. But meanwhile, it's all hollow because it doesn't have the anandam buddhivardhanam, the higher taste of ecstasy. So it is empty. So in that, therefore it is envious, and it is the same as that kind of envy is also there in Bhagavatam, in the very beginning of the second canto. Is a famous verse, Nidraya riyate naktam vyavava yena ca vavaya diva charte haya rajan kutumba baranenava. The lifetime of such envious householders is passed at night either in sleeping or in sex indulgence, and in the daytime either in making money or maintaining family members. So again, it's like some sort of envious person who's living in his own domain, right? And he may be very peaceful. He may never be negative towards anyone else. But still, Prabhupada called him envious. And Bhagavatam calls him envious. Right? So I forgot to mention that also. So I thought a sort of a passive, defensive envy. Just the person is so strong in his own conviction, his own faith, but there's no real happiness inside. So then it's envious. Then I want to continue. Let me see. So yesterday we were discussing about Nakula Brahmachari and how Nakula Brahmachari became empowered by the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord manifested himself in Nakula Brahmachari. And suddenly Nakula Brahmachari began to show the same symptoms as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He became effulgent. He developed extraordinary symptoms of love of God. Sometimes he was acting like a madman, confused. Tears were showing from his eyes. And he was just so ecstatic that everyone was amazed. So sometimes Lord Chaitanya, it says, in order to preach Krishna consciousness, is manifesting himself in another person. And this is called the avesha of the Lord. When he is manifesting his energy into another being, living being. Then we also discussed yesterday a little bit about the avirbhav appearance of the Lord. I just begin with that. How the Lord just appears somewhere. And how Mother Sachi was cooking for Nimai, and that Nimai actually came, although he was far away in Jagannath Puri, but he came to eat the offering. So there is another description also similar to that. So we'll read about Nrisinga Nanda or Pradyumna Brahmachari, who also had some extraordinary experiences. From the Antya Lila, second chapter. It continues after the story of Nakula Brahmachari. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu always appeared in four places. In the household temple of Mother Sachi, we spoke about that yesterday. In the places where Sri Nityananda Prabhu danced. In the house of Srivas Pandit during congregational chanting. And in the house of Raghava Pandit. He appeared because of his attraction to the love of his devotees. This is his natural characteristics. We may remember the Panihati pastime, the Chirdai Utsav, where Raghunath Das was visiting Lord Nityananda and was called a thief and was punished by Lord Nityananda. He was a thief because he paid his obeisances at a distance and didn't give Lord Nityananda the chance to embrace him. So he stole away the embrace. Therefore, Lord Nityananda called him a thief and punished him by wanting him to distribute this a feast of chip rice. recently we celebrated that in South Africa, a little at an odd time, but Jaipitaka Maharaj personally came and organized it all. And he had something like a dozen different types of chip rice, from salty to ones with yogurt, which are medium sweet, to super sweet one with the kheer, and then all flavored with different types of fruits and spicing and nuts and things. And so there's a whole culture in there, in the in this chip rice. Don't think it's just chip rice soaked in some yogurt or some, you know, just flat rice. And we go like, it's not very exciting. No, it was very exciting. You know, it's like the amount of dried fruits and mangoes and sweets that are in there also, in the sweet ones, is impressive. If you go to Panihati, it is just outside of Calcutta. It's very nice, that festival, once a year. Because in Panihati, the Ganges flows, and it flows straight. It's not in a curve, like in Mayapur, where the current is very strong. But because it flows straight, the Ganges along the side is kind of peaceful. In the middle, it's very strong. And there's lots of trees. Big banyan tree, where Lord Nityananda said, is still there, and many other trees. So you can nicely take bath there. And there is a little canal around the center of town, and it blocks off the whole path through the Ganges, so no cars can go there. So that makes Panihati especially nice, because there's no cars, and the Ganges is there, it's very green, and these beautiful trees, and then this festival. Everyone is there with some chip rice. You see everywhere people sitting, soaking chip rice, and distributing it. It is just happening the day before Snan Yatra, usually in the months of June somewhere. If ever you are in Mayapur at that time, it's very nice. Panihati and Snan Yatra. They're two festivals. I can really recommend them. Snan Yatra in Mayapur is also very nice, because all the devotees, they carry pots of Ganga water on their head all the way to the Jagannath temple in Harinam. So by the time you've carried your pot of Ganga water on your head for 3 kilometers in order to bathe Lord Jagannath with it, you've really become attached to your pot, and you're really determined that you're going to bathe Lord Jagannath with that water, right? You carried it for 3 kilometers, you know. So the spirit of eagerness to bathe Lord Jagannath is very, very big. So it's very nice, these two festivals. So if ever you're in India at that time, go to Panihati and to Mayapur for Snan Yatra. Not to Puri. It's much nicer in Mayapur, Snan Yatra. Ratha Yatra one time, go to Puri. But Snan Yatra, Mayapur is the place. So anyway, at the time when Lord Chaitanya was present, or let's say when Lord Nityananda was present, and Raghunath Das came, all the people heard that Raghunath Das was going to make a big feast, and they all knew Raghunath's very wealthy, it's going to be really big. So the place filled up with so many devotees from everywhere, and it said there was no more place on the banks, they even sat in the water. And at that time, everyone had his different pots with the chip rice. And it said that then Lord Nityananda started walking in between all the people. And some could see that Lord Chaitanya was also there. And those who could see that were seeing that Lord Chaitanya was taking a little chip rice and putting it in the mouth of Lord Nityananda. And the Lord Nityananda was taking a little bit and putting it in the mouth of Lord Chaitanya. And that in this way they went around to everyone's pot and took a little bit out of everyone's pot. So everyone was getting the direct Mahaprasadam tasted by both the Lords. So that was pretty good. So this was another case of an Avirbhav appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who just appeared there but could not be seen by all, but nonetheless he appeared there. Another story is that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to always appear in the house of Raghava Pandit. It said Raghava Pandit in his previous birth was Danista. Danista was a gopi who was always in charge of making arrangements for feeding Krishna. So therefore, in the incarnation of Raghava Pandit, Danista was doing the same thing and had a sister. Raghava Pandit had a sister named Damayanti. And Damayanti was an amazing cook. She would cook all kinds of preparations, and especially preparations that stayed good for a long time. She was making like coconut balls with different spices, etc. On one occasion, it says, she even made balls from, she took mud from the Ganga, and she filtered it and filtered it and filtered it until it was very fine, and then she mixed it with spices and some sugar. And she put some of these balls also with the preparations. Very small, I guess, isn't it? Well, just swallow a little Ganga mud. And then Raghava Pandit used to get little cloth bags made and just filled up those bags with all these preps. So they were known as the Raghavira Jali. The Raghavira Jali were very famous. And all the devotees knew about it. If you would get a Raghavira Jali, you were, whoa, ho. Right? So it's like, oof. And people would know the bags and go, oh, that's a Raghavira Jali. Yes, yes. What you have in there? Right? Like this. The devotees all were very familiar with that. And they would share with each other the prasadam. And Lord Chaitanya was getting so many of these bags and was keeping them in large stock. So even in Panihati, Raghava Pandit was distributing. Raghava Pandit is also famous of the coconuts, the clipping of these super special coconuts from special trees somewhere that were like the sweetest and the juiciest and had the thickest malai, the thickest cream inside. And somehow or other, he knew which ones were the best, and he got the best and had them all prepared, clipped nicely, cut nicely, and then the servant who carried them touched the door frame and then touched the coconut. He said, throw it away, it's not suitable to be offered. And start all over, bring new coconuts, and they'll start again. So Raghava Pandit was not, had not, didn't have some sort of strange fanaticism towards cleanliness, you know, some sort of phobia, right, for dust and dirt. But rather, he had such a high standard of devotion that for the Lord, only the best. And because he had this standard, therefore the Lord would sometimes appear in his house also. So, in this way, Lord Chaitanya and his, in his Avir Bhav appearances, would appear. So, we continue to read a little bit. One year, Shrikanta Sena, a nephew of Shivananda Sena, came alone to Jagannath Puri in great eagerness to see the Lord. Seeing Shrikanta Sena, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu bestowed causeless mercy upon him. Shrikanta Sena stayed near Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for about 2 months at Jagannath Puri. When he was about to return to Bengal, the Lord told him, forbid the devotees of Bengal to come to Jagannath Puri this year. See, Lord Chaitanya was allowing the devotees of Bengal to come once a year for Rath Yatra. And after that, he would send them back. And he wouldn't allow them to stay with him in Jagannath Puri. Only a few. He had a smaller group of associates with him in Jagannath Puri. But otherwise, the Bengali devotees were coming once a year and would stay for 4 months during the rainy season, and Chaturmasya, this time, and then have Rath Yatra in July, and stay for that. And then, so in this way, Lord Chaitanya said, forbid the devotees of Bengal to come to Puri this year. So, it seemed to be a heavy statement. But then the Lord said, this year I shall personally go to Bengal and meet all the devotees there, headed by Advaitacharya. Please inform Shivananda Sen that this December I shall certainly go to his home. Jagadananda is there and he will give me offerings of food. Inform them all that no one should come to Jagannath Puri this year. When Shrikanta Sen returned to Bengal and delivered his message, the minds of all the devotees were very pleased. Advaitacharya was just about to go to Jagannath Puri with the other devotees, but upon hearing this message, he waited. Shivananda Sen and Jagadananda also stayed back, awaiting the arrival of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When the months of Posha arrived, both Jagadananda and Shivananda collected all kinds of paraphernalia for the Lord's reception. Every day they would wait until evening for the Lord to come. As the months passed, but Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not come, Jagadananda and Shivananda became most unhappy. Suddenly, Nrisingananda arrived, and Jagadananda and Shivananda arranged for him to sit near them. Seeing them both so unhappy, Nrisingananda inquired, "Why do I see that you are both despondent?" Then Shivananda Sain told him, "Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu promised that he would come. Why then has he not arrived?" Hearing this, Nrisingananda Brahmachari replied, "Please be satisfied. I assure you that I shall bring him here 3 days from now." Shivananda and Jagadananda knew of Nrisingananda Brahmachari's influence and love of Godhead. Therefore, they now felt assured that he would certainly bring Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. His real name was Pradyumna Brahmachari. The name Nrisingananda had been given to him by Lord Gaurasundar himself. After meditating for 2 days, Nrisingananda Brahmachari told Shivananda, saying, "I have already brought Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to the village known as Panihati." So that's very close. That is right there in Bengal. So, this is very interesting, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared there in the Panihati festival. And here we're seeing then an indication that Nrisingananda had something to do with that, apparently. Tomorrow at noon, he will come to your home. Therefore, bring all kinds of cooking ingredients. I shall personally cook and offer him food. In this way, I shall bring him here very soon. Be assured that I'm telling you the truth. Do not be doubtful. Bring all the ingredients very soon, for I want to begin cooking immediately. Please do what I say. Nrisingananda Brahmachari said to Shivananda, "Please bring whatever cooking ingredients I want." Thus Shivananda Sain immediately brought whatever he asked for. Beginning early in the morning, Nrisingananda Brahmachari cooked many varieties of food, including vegetables, cakes, sweet rice, and other preparation. After he finished cooking, he brought separate dishes for Jagannath and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He also offered dishes to Nrisingadev, his worshipful deity. Thus he divided all the food into 3 offerings. Then outside the temple, he began to meditate upon the Lord. In his meditation, he saw Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu quickly come, sit down, and eat all 3 offerings, leaving behind no remnants. Pradyumna Brahmachari was overwhelmed by transcendental ecstasy upon seeing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu eating everything. Thus tears flows from his eyes. Nevertheless, he expressed dismay, saying, "Alas, alas, my dear Lord, what are you doing? You're eating everyone's food. My dear Lord, you are one with Jagannath. Therefore, I have no objection to your eating his offering. But why are you touching the offering to Lord Nrisingadev? I think that Nrisingadev could not eat anything today, and therefore he's fasting. If the master fasts, how can the servant live?" Although Nrisinga Brahmachari felt jubilation within his heart to see Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu everything for the sake of Lord Nrisingadev, he externally expressed disappointment. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. Therefore, there is no difference between him, Lord Jagannath, and Lord Nrisingadev. Pradyumna Brahmachari was deeply eager to understand this fact. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu revealed it to him by a practical demonstration. After eating all the offerings, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu started for Panihati. There he was greatly satisfied to see the different varieties of vegetables prepared in the house of Raghava. Sivananda said to Nrisingananda, "Why are you expressing dismay?" Nrisingananda replied, "Just see the behavior of your Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He alone is eating the offerings for all 3 deities. Because of this, both Jagannath and Nrisingadev remain fasting." When Sivananda Sain heard this statement, he was unsure whether Nrisingananda Brahmachari was speaking that way because of ecstatic love or because it was actually a fact. When Sivananda Sain was thus perplexed, Nrisingananda Brahmachari said to him, "Bring more food let me cook again for Lord Nrisimhadev. Then Sivananda Sen again brought the ingredients with which to cook, and Pradyumna Brahmachari again cooked and offered the food to Nrisimhadev. The next year, Sivananda went to Jagannath Puri with all the other devotees to see the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. One day in the presence of all the devotees, the Lord raised these topics concerning Nrisimhananda Brahmachari and praised his transcendental qualities. The Lord said, last year in the months of Posa, when Nrisimhananda gave me varieties of sweetmeats and vegetables to eat, they were so good that I had never before eaten such prasadam. Hearing this, all the devotees were struck with wonder, and Sivananda became confident that the incident was true. So again, he did bring him, actually, although not everyone noticed it, but then he did bring him, and Lord Chaitanya actually ate the offerings. Although others didn't see it, but it was later on confirmed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, who was referring to the taste of different preps, etc., that had been offered that time. So in this way, although others didn't see it, Lord Chaitanya actually appeared. So when Lord Chaitanya appears, it may not be seen by everyone necessarily so, but it may be seen by some. We also see a description of the Beda Kirtan parties, how at one point Lord Chaitanya in Jagannath Puri divided up the Kirtan of all the devotees and then into 8 different parties, and how he appointed different dancers and different Kirtan leaders for each of these parties. But it is said that some could see that Lord Chaitanya was personally dancing in every party and had expanded himself into 8 forms. But not everyone could see that. But some could see. Right? So sometimes it appears like that, that not everyone is capable of perceiving the transcendental appearance of the Lord or other mystical feats. Anyway, this is describing how the avirbhav is there of the Lord in different occasions and different places described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So now I want to read about one more avirbhav, and then in the wrong canto. So we're going back to the Adi Lila number 9, to text number 50, which is very significant. There in the purport, Prabhupada is describing that we are here again back in the chapter which is describing Lord Chaitanya as the gardener. And it says, when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the great gardener, sees that people are chanting, dancing and laughing, and that some of them are rolling on the floor, and some of them are making loud humming sounds, he smiles with great pleasure. Purport. This attitude of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is very important for persons engaged in the Hare Krishna movement of Krishna consciousness. In every center of our institution, ISKCON, we have arranged for a love feast every Sunday. And when we actually see people come to our center, chant, dance, take prasad, become jubilant and purchase books, we know that certainly Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is always present in such transcendental activities, and he is very pleased and satisfied. Therefore, the members of ISKCON must increase this movement more and more according to the principles that we are presently trying to execute. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, thus being pleased, will smilingly glance upon them, bestowing his favor, and the movement will be successful. So here we see another, Prabhupada describes another avirbhav experience, appearance, an avirbhav appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu right there in the Sunday feast. So that's pretty far out, right? It's like, and that takes the whole thing back to modern times. ISKCON is described as a branch of the Chaitanya tree, and we see actually that, that Prabhupada explains that Lord Chaitanya personally appears on the Sunday feast. So don't underestimate what's going on at the Sunday feast. Especially when there's enthusiastic dancing and chanting going on. That is important. So yeah, to me that's like pretty nice. I liked it. Huh? That is Adi Lila, chapter 9, text 50, purport. So I'll read one more time. Oh. I'll read one more time these five different topics that Prabhupada referred to that were very important for us in the CC. On page number 5 of the paper, Prabhupada said, I'll skip the first sentence. The most important chapters in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, namely, his teachings to Rupa Goswami, teachings to Sanatana Goswami, his talks with Prakashananda Saraswati, his talks with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and his talks with Ramananda Roy. These five subject matters are delineated in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya specifically. So, obviously, since Prabhupada is describing them as the most important, here, especially for the devotees who are on the second stage, the difference between a devotee on the first stage, or Kanista Adhikari, and one who is on the Madhyam Adhikari stage, is the Madhyam Adhikari has firm faith. Firm faith in what? Firm faith in Krishna, firm faith in the process, firm faith in the spiritual master. He believes that Krishna consciousness works, right? Whereas the Kanista Adhikari, well, he's not sure. He likes Krishna consciousness, but he's not sure that Krishna consciousness will ultimately make him happy. Therefore, his faith is weak, and he also puts faith for his happiness in material things. And in this way, he will not fully adjust his life to the scriptures. He will not fully dedicate himself to the process of Krishna consciousness. He will not really follow the scriptures because he will still be inclined to look for security in material things. So such people cannot advance very much in Krishna consciousness, only little. So one must come to that platform of applying himself and readjusting one's life according to the scriptures. So especially for those who are ready to do that, these five main chapters or descriptions are very important in the entire Chaitanya Charitamrita. Of course, I want to deal with more than that, but within the next few days, I will in particularly focus on these five topics. And therefore, I want to start reading now about the meeting with Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. We know that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu met Rupa and Sanatana at one point after taking sannyas. We find in the beginning of the Madhya Lila. The Madhya Lila begins with an overview. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, just like Prabhupada, was very old when he was taking on this work of writing the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And just as Prabhupada was thinking that, well, maybe I'll never be able to finish my work, my books, therefore Prabhupada first gave summary studies of the 10th canto in Krishna book and teachings of Lord Chaitanya about the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So in the same way, we see that Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is giving summary studies. He, in the Madhya Lila, he first gives a whole summary study of all the different pastimes that Lord Chaitanya engaged in while he was as a preacher, and everything that happened. So it's given in a code form in the first chapter. And then in the following chapters, in the following 24 chapters of the Madhya Lila, it all elaborates on those same things. But the meeting with the two brothers, Rupa and Sanatan, that first meeting is described here kind of elaborately and doesn't come back any later. And it begins in number... Well, first of all, the two brothers, Rupa and Sanatan, when they were young, they were both had taken birth in a Brahmin family, a Saraswat Brahmin family originally from South India. But the family had some property in West Bengal, and therefore the family had moved to Bengal. So they were very brilliant students, and that was noted by the governor of Bengal, who was at that time Nawab Hussain Shah. And Nawab Hussain Shah enrolled these two brothers in his government and made it like kind of clear to them that, well, either government service or the family might not be entirely, it may not be so healthy for the for your relatives. So in this way, the brothers surrendered and took up government service. So they were kind of forced. Subsequently, they became very prominent, and one became the prime minister and the other one the finance ministers. So, I mean, those are the most important ministers, without a doubt. So, Dabir Khas was the he was the one of the two. Here it says that Rupa Goswami was known as Dabir Khas, and that Sanatan Goswami would then be Sakar Malik. I always thought it was the other way around. Huh? Yes, okay. Very good. Sanatan Goswami is known as Sakar Malik, and Rupa Goswami is Dabir Khas. So, at this stage, they are still known by their Muslim names, and they are still in the Muslim government. At that time, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was traveling to Bengal, and the Mohammedan king was hearing that some great Hindu prophet, Hindu saint, was traveling through the country. It said, when the Mohammedan king of Bengal heard of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's influence in attracting innumerable people, he became very astonished and began to speak as follows. Such a person who is followed by so many people without giving them charity must be a property. I can surely understand this fact. The Mohammedan king ordered the magistrate, do not disturb this Hindu prophet out of jealousy. Let him do his own will, whatever he likes. When the Mohammedan king asked his assistant, Kesava Chatri, for news of the influence of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Kesava Chatri, although knowing everything about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, tried to avoid the conversation by not giving any importance to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's activities. Kesava Chatri informed the Mohammedan king that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a mendicant touring different places of pilgrimage, and that as such, only a few people came to see him. Kesava Chatri said, out of jealousy, your Mohammedan servant plots against him. I think that you should not be very interested in him, for there's no profit in it. Rather, there's simply loss. After pacifying the king in this way, Kesava Chatri sent a Brahmana messenger to Lord Chaitanya, requesting him to leave without delay. In private, the king inquired from Dabir Khas, Srila Rupa Goswami, who began to speak about the glories of the Lord. Srila Rupa Goswami said, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who gave you this kingdom, and whom you accept as a prophet, has taken birth in your country due to your good fortune. This prophet always desires your good fortune. By his grace, all your business is successful. By his blessings, you will attain victory everywhere. Why are you questioning me? Better that you question your own mind, because you are the king of the people. You are the representative of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, you can understand this better than I. Thus, Srila Rupa Goswami informed the king about his mind as a way of knowing Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He assured the king that whatever occurred in his mind could be considered evidence. The king replied, I consider Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There is no doubt about it. After having this conversation with Rupa Goswami,
The king entered his private house. Rupa Goswami, then known as Dabirkas, also returned to his residence. After returning to his residence, Dabirkas and his brother decided, after much consideration, to go see the Lord incognito. Thus, in the dead of night, the two brothers, Dabirkas and Sakhar Malik, went to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu incognito. First, they met Nityananda Prabhu and Haridas Thakur. Sri Nityananda Prabhu and Haridas Thakur told Lord Chaitanya that two personalities, Sri Rupa and Sanatan, had come to see him. In great humility, both brothers took bunches of straw between their teeth, and each binding a cloth around his neck, they fell down like ruts before the Lord. Upon seeing Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the two brothers were overwhelmed with joy, and out of humility, they began to cry. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked them to get up and assured them of all good fortune. The two brothers got up, and again, taking straw between their teeth, they humbly offered their prayers with folded hands. All glories to Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the most merciful savior of all the fallen souls. All glories to the Supreme Personality. Sir, we belong to the lowest class of men, and our associates and employment are also of the lowest type. Therefore, we cannot introduce ourselves to you. We feel very much ashamed standing here before you. Dear Lord, let us inform you that no one is more sinful than us, nor is there any offender like us. Even if we wanted to mention our sinful activities, we would immediately become ashamed, and what to speak of giving them up. Both brothers submitted, Dear Lord, you have incarnated to deliver the fallen souls. You should consider that in this world, there is none so fallen as us. You have delivered the two brothers, Jagai and Madai. But to deliver them, you did not have to exert yourself very much. The brothers Jagai and Madai belonged to the Brahmana caste, and their residence was in the holy place of Navadvip. They never served low-class persons, nor were they instruments to abominable activities. Jagai and Madai had but one fault. They were addicted to sinful activity. However, volumes of sinful activities can be burnt to ashes simply by a dim reflection of your holy name. Jagai and Madai uttered your holy name by way of blaspheming you. Fortunately, that holy name became the cause of their deliverance. We too are millions and millions of times inferior to Jagai and Madai. We are more degraded and fallen and sinful than they. So I'd like to ask you a question for a change. Why are the two brothers, Rupa and Sanatan, millions and millions of times inferior to Jagai and Madai? What were their arguments to be inferior? Huh? You said something, but I couldn't hear it. They were serving the Muslim ruler. So why was that more inferior than Jagai and Madai? Okay, it's partially correct. Not Huh? I must be dead. The bell, and you have to speak very loud, otherwise we cannot hear it. All right. Okay. That's pretty low. I mean, of course, a Brahmin is said when a Brahmin is engaging in service of someone, he loses his Brahminical status and becomes a Sudra. But Jagai and Madai, I mean, they were also Brahmins, but they had become lower than Sudra. They were drunks. They were drunks. They were setting fire to people's places. They were fighting, screaming. It is said that the amount of sinful activities of Jagai and Madai was so much. In Chaitanya Bhagavat, it is described that Jagai and Madai committed so many sinful activities that the servants of Yamaraj were getting exhausted. Chitragupta, who is the writer of Yamaraj, to keep records of sinful activities, has many assistants. And all these writers were getting... They couldn't keep up with it. They get cramp in their hands. And they have many messengers who bring information. And it's said that some of the messengers were falling exhausted by the wayside because there was so much to report about Jagai and Madai. So then how can these two brothers, just giving up their rabbinical status, be considered more sinful than Jagai and Madai? How? Huh? More humble. So they were not really more sinful. It's just more humble. Okay. But again, you have to speak very loud. Killer of cows. Yes. Of course, okay, killing a cow is very sinful, and we don't know if Jagga and Madai never killed a cow. I wouldn't hold it beyond them. Because they were killers. They killed man, they killed cow, they probably killed cow as well. I don't think that that was the difference between them. We'll try. Someone else want to try? Loud and clear. Sorry, there's not a second mic. Oh, okay. I think that the real thing to understand is that Jagga and Madai, they were committing sinful activities, and they were very doing all the degraded activities, but they were just doing them. It was only what they were doing themselves, right? It was only their own activities. Right? But Rupa and Sanatan, by being ministers, they were kind of supporting a whole army of Jagais and Madais, right? So it was a huge army of Jagais and Madais who were being protected by Rupa and Sanatan. And because of that, there was much more damage done than the damage done by only two Jagais and Madais. But here, millions, so many Jagais and Madais were doing the same destructive work, and all made possible by these two brothers. Therefore, they considered themselves millions of times more sinful than Jagga and Madai. And additionally, they said that, yes, these two brothers were also chanting the holy name, right? Now, of course, Rupa and Sanatan, or Dabirkas and Sakar Malik, they had the village where they were staying, known as Ram Keli. There they had made a replica of Vrindavan. Okay? They had made different ghats and different places, and it was there that actually, although they were engaged in the Muslim government, they were still maintaining their own spiritual life at the same time. So it wasn't. So in one sense, it was humility. It is true, but in another sense, they're also right. They were maintaining. The point is true. They were maintaining all these sinful men who were cow killers and who were causing so much disturbance. Right. So they had an argument there. They had an argument. Of course, they were forced into it. They never wanted it, and that is another matter. But here they take responsibility for it. Right. Actually, we belong to the caste of meat eaters because we are servants of meat eaters. Indeed, our activities are exactly like those of the meat eaters because we always associate with such people. We are inimical toward the cows and brahmanas. The two brothers, Sakar Malik and Dabirkas, very humbly submitted that due to their abominable activities, they were now bound by the neck and had been thrown into a ditch filled with abominable stew-like objects of material sense enjoyment. No one within the three world is sufficiently powerful to deliver us. You are the only savior of the fallen souls. Therefore, there is no one but you. If you simply deliver us by your transcendental strength, then certainly your name will be known as the savior of the fallen. Let us speak one word that is very true. Please hear us, O merciful one. There is no other object of mercy within the three worlds but us. We are the most fallen. Therefore, by showing us your mercy is most successful. Let the power of your mercy be exhibited throughout the entire universe. Let us submit one piece of information before you, more suitable candidates for your mercy. We are very depressed at being unfit candidates for your mercy. Yet, since we've heard at your transcendental qualities, we are very much attracted to you. Indeed, we are like a dwarf who want to capture the moon. Although we're completely unfit, a desire to receive your mercy is awakening within our minds. By serving you constantly, one is freed from all material desires and is completely pacified. When shall I engage as your permanent eternal servant and always feel joyful to have such a fitting master? After hearing the prayer of Dabir Khas and Sakhar Malik, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "My dear Dabir Khas, you two brothers are my old servants. My dear Sakhar Malik, from this day, your names will be changed to Srila Rupa and Srila Sanatan. Now please abandon your humility, for my heart is breaking to see you so humble." So here basically, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying, stop this humility. He couldn't tolerate it any longer to see that these brothers were just lying there and proclaiming how fallen they were. And it was breaking the Lord's heart. So this is the nature of the Lord, that humility can break his heart. So that's very important. Therefore, Trinadapi Suni Chena Tarodapi Suhisuna is so important. This concept of humility is so important because it attracts Krishna. Right? He cannot resist it. So that is why it is such a important quality for the Vaishnavas. We can expand on it and find like other explanations why humility is so important. One can say that when one is very proud, then naturally one's mind is filled with one's own glories. And then how is there room for the glories of the Lord? So first, there must be humility so that the mind is empty from all these false glories. And then there's room for the glories of the Lord. Like that one can explain also. But the most important thing is that humility has the special power to purchase Krishna. Krishna is very soft-hearted. And when a devotee displays such type of humility as the two brothers are doing, then the Lord becomes very, very merciful upon that person. And now, this is a very important principle, and it will come out several times more in the later, in the dealings with Rupa and Sanatana Goswami, how this humility is again capturing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. On this occasion, Rupa and Sanatana, their names have been changed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And this is counted as if they were initiated. Here Prabhupada said, purport. Actually, this is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's initiation of Dabir Khas and Sakhar Malik. They approached the Lord with all humility, and the Lord accepted them as old servants, as eternal servants, and he changed their names. It is to be understood from this that it is essential for a disciple to change his name after initiation. Shankha chakradi urdvapundra dharanadat milakshanam tanamakaranam chaiva vaishnavatman ihuchate. After initiation, the disciple's name must be changed to indicate that he is a servant of Lord Vishnu. The disciple should also immediately begin marking his body with tilak, urdapundra, especially his forehead. These are spiritual marks, symptoms of a perfect Vaishnava. This is a verse from the Padma Purana, Uttarakhanda. A member of the Sahaja Sampradaya does not change his name. Therefore, he cannot be accepted as a Gaudiya Vaishnava. If a person does not change his name after initiation, it is to be understood that he will continue in his bodily conception of life. Okay, so that's about the changing of the name. But the first point was that this is taken as the initiation of Rupa and Sanatana. So this is important because sometimes our Sampradaya is under attack, right? Here in Vrindavan, there are different Vaishnavas, and not all the Vaishnavas are in agreement with the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. Some of the Vaishnavas are in disagreement. So are the Babadis from Radhakund, in particularly in disagreement with our Sampradaya. That already started with Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. there was a difference of opinion about various points. One point was the birth site of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They had a different birth site of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and didn't accept the birth site as being in Mayapur. So up to the day of today, that is still there. And one can still, in Radhakund, if one gets more familiar, initially there may be some nice contact, some friendship, just that, but then after a little while, that point will come out. Another point that is there amongst the Babaji community is the concept of Siddha Pranali. The concept of Siddha Pranali, refers to process by which a spiritual master reveals the spiritual body to his disciple. Yeah. Now, the Babajis are of the opinion that this is done at the time of initiation. Yes. They say, this Siddha Deha is given at the time of initiation. Yes. Therefore, the initiation, Siddha Pranali, is part of it, or giving the spiritual identity. In the Gaudiya Vaishnav Sampradaya, we also recognize the principle of Siddha Pranali. There are some references to that. One is you can find it in Bhakti Vinod Thakur's Harinam Chintamani at the very end. You find a reference to Siddha Pranali. You can also find something in Jaiva Dharma from Bhakti Vinod Thakur. The point about it is that Siddha Pranali, the bona fide one, is where a spiritual master is revealing to a disciple who is about to approach Krishna Prem his spiritual identity. So one who is at the highest platforms of bhava is Prema Ruruksu, approaching Prem. Such a candidate would be eligible to be guided further by a spiritual master who will help him and will tell him 11 symptoms, the type of spiritual body, the family that he is in, the service he has, under who he is serving, and all these kind of symptoms are described in there. Of course, we talk for a moment about the bona fide Siddha Pranali. It's not so that this appears the only way to experience love of God. It may be that love of God is revealed like that by a spiritual master, but it may also be that it just automatically reveals from within the heart to one who is sincerely following the process which is given by the spiritual master. Simply, yasya deva pra bhaktir. And the last line is pakashante mahatmanaha, and Prabhupada translates as, it will be automatically revealed. So there are these two understandings about how love of God may manifest. The Babajis are the Radhakund Babajis are especially very attached to this Siddha Pranali concept, and they say it happens at the time of initiation, and then one gets his spiritual identity, and then one begins to meditate on serving Krishna from that spiritual identity. So one is told he's a certain gopi, and then in the mood of that gopi begins to serve Krishna. So this was very much rejected as an imaginary thing by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who pointed out that this is false, this is sahajya, it is not genuine. The genuine thing is that one really knows his spiritual identity, not that one artificially imagines it and begins to meditate like that. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur strongly condemned these Babajis and referred to them as sahajas. And Prabhupada continues with that also throughout his purports, and here also in CC, he is referring to them like that. Also, it may be noted that some devotees from ISKCON came in contact with such Babajis. Here in Vrindavan, particularly, one of them has an ashram and is quite learned. And we find a little history in our movement how one of Prabhupada's Sanskrit editors named Nitai was very famous, and that Nitai started to go outside here in Vrindavan and started to listen to various lectures. So it turned out that he was listening to a representative of this Radhakund Babaji Sampradaya named Haridas Shastri. And at that time he went there and Prabhupada told him not to go anymore. And told him, he said, if you don't like the quality of the lectures, then in our temple, then you can give them. But, you know, don't go outside. And but Nitai still went outside and eventually gave up Prabhupada and went for that other Sampradaya. And Prabhupada wrote in a letter that Nitai has become a black snake, right? So that was a very heavy thing, very heavy letter and a very heavy thing to say. And we've seen that in more recent times, again, devotees have gone there and made a connection with Haridas Shastri. And the principal one that came out of our Krishna Balaram Mandir in the last few years was Sachin Narayan, who was an Indian devotee, scholar, who wrote also the book, some books that are available here in the bookshops everywhere in Vrindavan, Fall of the Jiva. He did a translation of Tattva Sandarbha. So he is also studying under that Sampradaya. And then also launched an attack on our Sampradaya, saying that it was not bona fide, because there is not always, in many cases there's not a Diksha connection, only a Siksha connection. So how is that bona fide? And they are not accepting these Siksha connections. So therefore they say the whole disciplic successions that we have on our altar is not bona fide. But we understand by the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that the formality of initiation is not so essential. And especially when we are dealing with very great personalities, right, then the connection can be just there in what seems apparently casual. Like here, you know, just changing the names is kind of casual. There is not even, I mean, there's no yajna, that's one thing. But the other thing, there's not even mantra, right? There's not even mantra given, you know, like at this point, right? Still, Prabhupada counts it as initiation, and we accept it as such. I could think of another example, that we don't see a very strong connection between Jagannath Das Babaji and Bhaktivinod Thakur. At least there's not much known of, like, a lot of intimate dealings, other than at least the main one standing out is that at the time when the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was found, that Jagannath Das Babaji came there and was brought there in the basket, paralyzed as he was at age 125, being the senior most Vaishnava, and that he jumped out of the basket in ecstasy and confirmed this is the place. And that is the strongest connection that we know of, right? And so, still, we take it that in this way, Bhaktivinod Thakur was accepting his authority, and on the strength of that, we simply say yes. We trace the line in this way. So when we are dealing with these very exalted Vaishnavas who are on the Uttama Adhikari platform, then we see that just some simple alignment, right? And immediately, and we just trace the Sampradaya through there. That is not artificial. That is bona fide and should be accepted. An interesting book about the our Sampradaya being a bona fide Sampradaya has been written by a sannyasi who left ISKCON in 1984 and went to the Gaudiya Math. Formerly it was known as Jagat Guru Swami, and he went to Sridhar Maharaj and became Nisringa Maharaj. He wrote a book which is called The Authorized Sarasvat Sampradaya. And it's a very good book, actually.
defeating all these attacks on our sampradaya. It gives like a very good defense on many, many details. So I don't want to get into the details here so much. But if one encounters such kind of things, I encountered it in my travels in different places. I encountered these things, well, here in Vrindavan, of course, I encountered it so many times. And I encountered it in the States, I encountered it in Germany, I met it in Holland, right? In England, so there's everything is there. So like that, that's why I'm addressing it, right? Because it is coming out in our movement. And, although I don't want to shift this seminar away from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, I felt that, I should spend a few minutes on this point. But we take it that Rupa and Sanatan, on Prabhupada say so, were initiated by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and were the direct disciples of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's mentioned here in the Madhya Lila, chapter 1, text 208 in the purport. And it's an important reference. Even in it, Madhya Lila, chapter 1, text 208. I mean, these kind of things are proof, you know. I mean, I write them down in my notebook because sooner or later someone's going to come up, you know, in ISKCON, some devotee will come up and then you say, well, what to say? And then you just say, well, Madhya Lila, you know, chapter 1, text 208, that's where Prabhupada says it, you know. That's it. That's the proof. So, like this, Chaitanya Charitamrita does offer proof in these kind of debates, which for us is sufficient. Maybe there are some responses, and otherwise we'll continue tomorrow. You have to prove it. See, they were very expert in making a case, right? They gave logic and arguments why they were more followed than Jagai and Madai. Prabhupada did say that, he does say here, I have one quote about mercy, and some quotes you can use. Oh, here. It's in empowerment, actually. It's right here. That the devotee is even more merciful than the Lord. In the case of Jagai and Madai, Sri Nityananda Prabhu was so angry that he would have immediately killed them. Sorry, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so angry that he would have immediately killed them. But Nityananda Prabhu was so kind that he not only saved them from death, but elevated them to the transcendental position. Thus, what was not possible for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was carried out by Nityananda Prabhu. Similarly, if one is true to Gaur Nitai's service in the disciplic succession, he can even excel Nityananda Prabhu's service. This is the process of disciplic succession. Nityananda Prabhu delivered Jagai and Madai, but a servant of Nityananda Prabhu, by his grace, can deliver many thousands of Jagais and Madais. That is the special benediction of the disciplic succession. So yes, many thousands of Jagais and Madais are being delivered by this movement. Prabhupada also said that, in another quote, which I don't have here, but that Jagai and Madai, they were like an exception in their time. There was no one like Jagai and Madai, drunks like that. But Prabhupada said, nowadays, it doesn't even stand out anymore because everyone has become like Jagai and Madai. It has become normal. Right? So in that way, we can think of ourselves like Jagais and Madais. But then what is your argument for being more sinful than Rupa, who proved with logic and reason that they were more sinful than Jagai and Madai? You're so fallen that you cannot even prove anything. That's your proof for being fallen. It's an argument. I don't know if the Lord will accept it, but you can submit your case before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In the next few days, we will deal more with the topic of humility, because soon we'll come to the instructions that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was giving to Rupa and Sanatan. And in particular, in that regard, Sri will deal with the topic of Sadachar. And Sadachar, humility, or the behavior of the saintly person, and humility is in the central core of that. So then we'll come, you'll see on page 11 of my paper here, the topic of humility is kind of there, and so I think we can really get into it in the next few days. Any other?
Yeah. Well, one might say that unless you are totally pure and free from any anatta, that you are not eligible to enter into the spiritual world, because no one can enter into the spiritual world unless he is 100% pure. So some people might make a case on the strength of that, that unless you are at the topmost level where you've actually realized all that, you're not successful in spiritual life. So in one sense, it's true that one is not successful. One has not reached the final goal. However, one can be successful if at the time of death, one is somehow or other promoted to that platform or to being eligible to the spiritual world. Now some may say, well, is not possible. But then one could argue, well, but there is a reference, which is Rupa Goswami. This reference is both in Chaitanya Charitamrita and in the Nectar of Devotion about the principle of Asabandha. And the principle of Asabandha means hope against hope. That hope against hope, even although we have no qualification, even although we are not successful, still one continues to hope against hope that one will get that mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and that in spite of everything else, still one will go back to Godhead. So this indicates that it is possible to get it. Not that one will get it, but that it's possible to get it. In other words, that it is possible to be promoted, even if one is not 100% pure, that some adjustment is made by the Lord. Right? In this regards, I usually present that, not only imagine our case. I'll just end with that. Huh? Imagine our case, something like us being in a sitting. We've just gone through our exam, and now the teachers or whoever, professors, they are judging our case. They're looking at the papers and say, well, there's a few of them meeting. And they say, this one's going to be difficult. It's going to be really difficult. Someone say, well, we should let him pass. Others say, well, I don't know. It may be better for him if he does it one more time, right? So, you know, that kind of a situation, right? So, but then, some say, well, but yeah, we are the movement, we are the university of Mahaprabhu, you know, mercifulness is our motto, I mean, we should let him pass. And someone says, yeah, that's true, but it may be more merciful to let him do it again one other time. Right? So the argument goes on, and it's a doubt case. But then one advocate may say, yes, but this one is one of Prabhupada's party.
Let him know.
I always have that feeling, you know, that will be a major factor, okay? A major factor at the end, an extra little piece of weight in the scale, okay? That since we belong to Prabhupada's party, you know, they may let us go. Even although we are not so qualified. That Lord Chaitanya then, why would he do that? Well, simply because Prabhupada would be disappointed if one of his party would not be able to go. And that Lord Chaitanya would not like to see. So not for our sake, but for Prabhupada's sake. That the Lord wouldn't want to disappoint Prabhupada. All right, then let him go. And I can prove it on the strength of the family members of Ramananda Roy. Who are being given special mercy by Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya says that my devotee is so dear to me. Even one of the brothers of Ramananda Roy was involved in some funny dealings with money and some corruption and this, that. And he was about to get a death penalty for it. But anyway, he was saved. And finally, Lord Chaitanya said, let this never happen again, but anyway, the residents of, the relatives of Ramananda Roy are, you know, so dear to me, how could I ignore them? There's another example also, Amoga, the son-in-law of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, offends Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu directly. And he's about to, next he gets a reaction for it and is about to die from cholera. Still he's saved. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is very upset. My Lord, why didn't you let him die? Lord Chaitanya said, how could I? Right? Said, you are so dear to me. All your relatives are dear to me. Said, like, I will, not only will I deliver you, I'll deliver all your relatives as well. So, therefore the Prabhupada connection is certainly significant, without a doubt, in our case. And therefore, there is a chance to go back to Godhead this lifetime, even if at the time of death we don't know our Siddha Deha. Thank you very much. We'll continue tomorrow.